When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I never thought that dragons would exist again. No one did. The people who follow you know that you made something impossible happen. Maybe that helps them believe that you can make other impossible things happen. Build a world that's different from the shit one they've always known. But if you use them to melt castles and burn cities, you're not different. You're just more of the same.
Greetings, everyone. I'm Kristen.
I'm Archmaester Rennie.
And this is House Podcastica.
This week, we are covering Season 7, Episode 4, Spoils of War, of our series rewatch.
And I am so happy to welcome you back, Archmaester Rennie. It is such a pleasure to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be back and to be talking about this amazing episode.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I just finished my second watch of it about 10 minutes ago. So I feel like I'm still, like, my hair is still on fire from it.
Your hair is on fire from the dragons, yes.
Oh, yes. Very much so. For those of you who don't know or may be new to the podcast, then you are brand new because Archmaester Rennie is a frequent voicemail voice on our episodes week to week, giving amazing insight and incredible extra little pieces of trivia and information. And I've been lucky enough to snag her twice now. So I'm just so happy to have you on. I'm happy that it's for such an amazing episode. I actually gave you the pick of it. I said I wanted to have you on
you
for
did.
Season 7, and I asked you which one you wanted.
And I said, oh, how about Spoils of War?
And I said, oh, really? It's so boring.
Yeah, but, you know, I'll try to spice it up.
There you go. I mean, it is a really boring episode, so we'll try and keep your attention, everybody.
Nothing much happens in this episode.
We are a spoiler-full podcast, meaning that we do cover anything and everything from Season 1, Episode 1, Winter is Coming, to Season 7, Episode 7, The Dragon and the Wolf, which is only a few weeks away.
Unbelievable. So I have signed up for the New York Times rewatch newsletter. Mm-hmm. They're doing a season by, not episode by episode, but season by season rewatch newsletter. And they start their newsletter out with this line: "This newsletter is dark and full of spoilers." So I think this podcast is going to be dark and full of spoilers.
Oh my gosh. I think I might be stealing that. Thank you, New York Times. So before we get started, I wanted to kind of get your take, since you are such a frequent guest and or a frequent contributor, and now you've been a guest for a few times. Do you have any hopes and dreams for season 8?
I do. Euron Greyjoy needs a spectacularly awful death.
Mm.
I hope that Melisandre burns him or that Drogon does. That's something that I really need to happen in season 8. I would like to see the Iron Throne get melted down. I think that is something that we may see, because the real battle has never been for the Iron Throne. The real conflict is between the White Walkers and the humans. And I don't want any kind of happy ending. George always says the ending will be bittersweet, and I hope that it is. I don't want it to turn into the cliche where evil is defeated and good King Aegon / Jon and Queen Dany reign justly and wisely. It's got to be more complicated than that. Yeah, and of course it has to be melted by Dragonfire, because it was forged by Dragonfire. So it could be melted down either by, you know, dead Viserion or by Drogon.
Yeah, I was just telling Dave earlier when we were watching this episode just a little bit ago that if the dragons all have to die, I just need them to lay some eggs. They cannot be the last dragons. They just can't. In my little pea brain sized world, I can't imagine a world without these dragons in them, even if it's fictional.
You know, originally George was not going to include dragons in the books. And the first book actually has a dedication to his friend who convinced him that there had to be dragons. But it is hard to imagine what this story would have been without having the dragons.
I don't know that it would be as wonderful. I mean, it would still be a good story, but I think the dragons just add in. It makes it less of a period piece and more of a fantasy piece.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, when you're reading the books, it's really easy to be reading books 1, 2, and 3 and forget that it's a fantasy series, because there's no magic to speak of. And it's the magic only starts to come back slowly after the dragons hatch. And so, yeah, it would read more like and be a show more like a historical drama rather than a fantasy series, if not for the dragons.
Yeah, absolutely. I could probably talk to you for like the next hour just about this back and forth, but in the spirit of time.
Let's move on.
So let's move on to our top five about the spoils of war. Would you like to go first?
Okay. So my number five is maps. So Cersei's map that she has painted on the floor, it mirrors the great table map at Dragonstone.
Oh.
And yeah, because that's a map of Westeros as well. And it was Aegon the Conqueror who had that map made at Dragonstone. And now Cersei's had her analog of that map made there in the Red Keep. And when she's talking to Tycho Nestoris from the Iron Bank, she walks out to stand by the map to emphasize that she thinks everything on that map belongs to her, just like it belonged to Aegon the Conqueror. And I think this is a power move on her part to go stand by that map. And she says she wants to get back everything that belongs to her. And I also think it's one more hint that Cersei is a Targaryen.
Oh, that's right. I love it that you love this. It's so, you know what, my favorite part about this theory that you have about all three of them being secret Targaryens is that Tywin Lannister doesn't have a legacy.
That's right. He has no children.
It's like George Washington, you know. They said that George Washington was sterile, which is why he didn't ever have children. And I just, you know, Tywin reminds me of kind of the militaristic mind, the larger than life character that Tywin Lannister was and George Washington was. I just think that there's a few different parallels when you look at the two of them. And I would love it if Tywin also didn't have kids.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. So Tywin would not have kids, and Robert Baratheon had no legitimate kids. So interesting.
So really, Targaryens have just always been in power. They never really went away. So my number five was actually reunions. We got a lot of them this episode. You know, you got, I'll save the main one for last, but the first one that we kind of got was Tyrion and Jaime. I mean, Jaime didn't see Tyrion, but Tyrion did see Jaime. And I think it's the first time that Tyrion has seen him since he left right before he killed Tywin. And
yes, that's,
you know,
right.
To watch as helplessly as Tyrion was kind of forced to watch his brother in action. And I'm not even sure that he's ever seen his brother in action before. So that probably had to have been a really complicated situation for Tyrion to root for him, yet not root for him at all. You know, it reminds me of just what a horrible position Tyrion has really been put in with being Daenerys's hand and having to go against his brother. Not so much his sister. His sister is the worst, but I think that this forced him to recognize that he is also going up against his brother, who he does love.
Yes, he does. He definitely does.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the only family member that he has any love for. We also had John and Theon's reunion, which I personally have really been looking forward to.
Yeah.
The only problem that I had with this reunion was that I just wish that John would have punched Theon once.
Yeah. Just grabbing him by the collar and giving him a little shake didn't seem adequate.
And I understand that Theon is like a beaten dog. I mean, he immediately went submissive when John approached him and grabbed him. Like, it's almost like he went boneless, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that's what we call it when our son, when he was a toddler, and we would try to get him to go somewhere and he would just like lose all of his reflexes and he would just go boneless and we're like, excuse me.
Yeah.
So I understand that you shouldn't, you know, kick a dog while he's down, but, and you know, that's kind of sad since he was a dog in a kennel for a really long time.
Well, that's the thing, is that he does kind of react the same way that he reacted when he was being tortured by Ramsay. He just immediately becomes all submissive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like John really deserved to punch him for everything that his family has been through. He's the only one that, I mean, other than maybe, you know what? Maybe Arya will do something to him.
Maybe she will, yeah.
I didn't think about Arya reuniting with Theon at some point until now.
And they probably will. Everybody's coming back together.
Mm-hmm. And then you also had Bran and the cat spa.
Yes.
They were finally reunited. Good old Littlefinger. And then you had the big reunions, right? All the Stark children are now together. And I feel comfortable saying that all the Stark children are back together now, as John is mm-hmm. not directly a Stark child, as we know. Mm-hmm. So with Arya coming home and her homecoming just as it was spectacular. I'm sure we'll talk about that later. But seeing Arya and Sansa get back together, and then Sansa and Bran and Arya all come back together at the Weirwood Tree, you know, I was struck with this thought that this is probably the time where the three of them maybe started to forge a plan against Littlefinger.
Yes.
Did you get that feeling?
It might be, because, you know, the next couple of episodes, they lead us on to believe about this rivalry, this, you know, competition between Arya and Sansa, which turns out never to have actually existed.
Right. And it just, you know, when you look at the, when you come back and you rewatch all of this and you really see the timing of everything, you know, Arya approaches Brienne right as Sansa's coming up the stairs and having a talk with Littlefinger. And, you know, poor Brienne was probably in the dark about the whole thing and she probably felt really bad about betraying Sansa. But, you know, they're training right there out in the middle of everywhere for everybody to see. And I think that this was a really good test of Littlefinger and kind of what his reaction would be and seeing what his movements would be. You know, Arya, we know she's very, very stealthy and she can be invisible. As we see that she's kind of clumsily following Littlefinger in the next episodes and just everything that gets kind of puzzled together up until that final scene with Littlefinger is just, I think it all begins at this weirwood tree. And when you come back and watch it, I can't help but think, look, we don't see everything. We're not meant to see everything. We are meant to put the pieces together at some point. And there's something that we missed between that reunion and this fight.
Yeah, I think that's true. Backing up to when Sansa and Arya first see each other, I love what Sansa says, that she can't wait until Arya and Jon see each other, because Jon was so happy when he saw Sansa that when he sees Arya, his heart will probably stop. And of course, his heart has already stopped.
Yeah, I said, when she said that, I said, again.
Again, exactly.
I was really hoping for that again. It's cool because I think that this is really the only episode in season 7 I've watched over and over and over again. With the rewatch, you know, you watch all of the earlier episodes so many more times than the more recent ones. So it's fun to revisit these and remember things that we possibly didn't before.
Yes.
I did make a note about the meeting at the Weirwood tree with Sansa. I love the dynamic between all three of these Stark kids because, you know, if you take Sansa outside of this particular scene with her brother and her sister, Sansa is somebody who has kind of steeled herself for anything, and she's become a very formidable woman, and she's strong, and she's slowly gaining confidence and in her leadership and herself. But then you put her with Arya and Bran, and she just looks like this uptight prude.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. She does.
And she just like, she's like, well, he's declared for House Stark. And then she said, Bran has visions. And I'm like, what, are you like a 60-year-old woman all of a sudden? What's going on with you right now? So it was just interesting to see kind of like when you put somebody who has really made herself as strong as Sansa has with Bran and Arya, who are just out to lunch, to be honest.
Yes.
It's created a very funny dynamic to me. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it has. Sansa's being Lady Stark, right? She's standing on her dignity, and there you have Arya, who's an assassin, and Bran, who's a tree.
I love it. I bet Sansa just goes, what has happened to my life?
Why are my siblings also weird?
And her other one is, you know, resurrected.
Yeah.
It's all wrong. And then her fake brother, Theon, has his own set of problems.
His own set of problems, yes.
Anyway, so that was my number 5, was just all of the reunions in this very quick episode. How about your number 4?
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Thank
you. my number 4 is the Valyrian steel dagger, the cat's paw blade. So I have a question for you.
Okay.
Why do you think Littlefinger gives Bran the dagger? He's got to be scheming something by doing that.
Gosh, what a great, wow, you stumped me. You know, I have thought about this. Do you have an answer?
No, I've stumped myself. I don't know where Littlefinger is going with this, giving Bran the dagger.
Because I feel like I have a good handle on why Bran gave it to Arya.
Yes.
Maybe it's Littlefinger's way of, if with Bran coming home, it makes Bran now Warden of the North and the Lord of Winterfell if something happens to Jon. And maybe this is his way of getting good with who he thinks is going to lead the North if his plan to overtake Westeros still holds.
I think that's probably the best explanation, because he gives that nice little speech about, you know, the other dagger, the one that pierced your mother's heart. I would have taken that dagger myself if I'd been able to. And now I'm going to protect her children like I swore to do. So he's trying to make himself seem important in Bran's eyes.
I have a question for you about that line. Do you think that he was telling the truth about putting himself in front of Catelyn? Sacrificing himself for Catelyn?
You know, that's a really good question. I believe that he is sincere in that she's the only woman he's ever loved. And I think he would have done anything that he could have to try to win her to, you know, after Ned was dead and she was a widow. I think he would have, if circumstances had allowed it, he would have tried to win her for himself. But I don't know if he would die for anyone. He's not a brave man. I'm not sure that he would give his life even for the one and only woman he's ever loved.
I think you're probably right. I just think that in this entire scene of lies, that was his one true sentence.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah, it might be.
But go on about the dagger.
So then after, you know, Bran doesn't respond, he doesn't say anything after Littlefinger makes that speech. Littlefinger says, oh, you must, you know, it must be so difficult for you to come back with the world in such chaos. And Bran just gives him that spooky, weirwood, three-eyed raven look and says, chaos is a ladder, repeating back Littlefinger's own phrase to him. Mm-hmm. And that has got to really scare the pants off of Littlefinger, because Littlefinger realizes that Bran has some way of knowing, and maybe he knows that Littlefinger just lied about not knowing who owned the dagger before. If Bran has insight into Littlefinger's plotting, then Littlefinger must know that he's in trouble. And then Arya and Sansa come in, and Bran gives the dagger to Arya. And I think that this has got to have great significance for season 8. A lot of attention is being drawn to that dagger. I mean, they've created this scene around this dagger that first what the interaction between Bran and Littlefinger is built around. And then the interaction between Bran and Arya. And she says, are you sure? That's a Valyrian steel dagger. She understands the worth of that blade. Mm. And I think her reiterating it's a Valyrian steel blade is significant, so that she's one of the five or six people who have Valyrian steel. So they therefore have the capacity to kill White Walkers with their blades.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm almost certain that Arya will kill a White Walker with that blade in season 8.
I hope she does it to save someone's life.
Yes, that would be the best way for that to play out.
I personally would love to see all of the Valyrian steel that is known to Westeros come together, get melted down, have Gendry, who was trained by the an apprentice to a blacksmith that knew how to work with Valyrian steel. I hope that he melts it all down and creates smaller weapons for more people with the Valyrian steel. Probably won't happen because it's a little complicated for 6 episodes, but
yeah,
it was just a thought that I had.
Yeah, well, Gendry, in fact, apprenticed with Tobo Mott, who is the blacksmith who reforged ice into Oathkeeper and Widow's Wail.
Stupid name.
I know. It's a very good chance that Gendry does know how to reforge Valyrian steel. And while it would be logical to reforge the Valyrian steel into smaller blades for more people, yeah, I just don't think there's time.
Okay. Do you think that we'll see Dawn?
Oh, I hope so.
We've seen it.
Yeah, we saw Arthur Dayne with it in the flashback to the Tower of Joy. And it's at Starfall because Ned took it back to Starfall after the events of the Tower of Joy. So the Dayne family has it, but we haven't seen any other Dayne, any contemporary Dayne characters.
Mm-hmm.
We have in the books, but we haven't seen them in the show. So there may be a Dayne character who appears out of nowhere with Dawn. Could happen. But I kind of doubt it.
Yeah. I know. I just wish we got all 10 episodes.
Oh, I was so disappointed on the podcast last week when you read off the lengths of the season 8 episodes, because I had thought that they were all going to be an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And they're not.
I know. I'm so upset about it myself.
Yes, I'm very bummed.
To Rima's point from last week, this very episode is less than an hour, shortest episode that they've done, and it is one of our favorites.
Yes, a good point. Yes, true.
So if we can just go with maybe the first two episodes are really expensive episodes, then maybe it'll make sense.
Maybe.
I don't know. I'm hoping.
And, you know, the other thing is, in this episode, the loot train battle is actually only 11 minutes long.
Crazy.
Doesn't it feel like it's about half an hour long?
I felt like it's like a Battle of the Bastards where you are reminded that Danny also has a huge moment in that episode, but you think that Battle of the Bastards is the entire episode. Just like the loot train, Spoils of War,
right.
I thought
right.
was standalone. And then I remember, oh, Arya also came home. There was that cool fight between Arya and Brienne. You know, there's a lot more that happens other than what you remember of the episode, which is always such a pleasant surprise.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm hopeful that they will be fantastic if short episodes. But I think we're not going to have a lot of time for plot intricacies. I think we're going to have a lot of really action-oriented episodes.
My number 4, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Is Davos.
Mm.
Davos is just, he's wonderful in this episode. It's very short and sweet, but, you know, he's definitely learned from Stannis he's got a couple of grammar corrections. He tells Jon Fewer. Was wonderful. You know, and when they're coming down that little walkway and him and John are talking, you know, I love the relationship that John and Davos have kind of cultivated for themselves, because Davos feels comfortable and equal enough with John to kind of rib him about the way that he might feel about Daenerys.
Yes.
And I don't think that that's a relationship that he had with Stannis, and probably not even his own son. So I'm sure that it's something that Davos holds close to his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love when he's talking to Missandei, and at the very end, he's like, will you forgive me if I change sides?
Yeah.
I know. Such a great moment. And then Davos, you know, when Theon comes ashore, and John goes to grab Theon, I love that Davos walks up to get closer to see what's happening. Like, he wants to protect John, but he stays far enough away to let John do what John needs to do. He's such a wonderful advisor. And Stannis was a fool for not using Davos the way that Davos should have been used, because I think he's always had that wisdom. I think he's always had that kind of reverence and discernment that that an advisor should have. I think that if Daenerys had Davos, it would be powerful. He is a character that I'm hoping makes it to the end.
Oh, yes.
Every
me too.
Fiber of my being. The fact that he's not a very good fighter tells me he probably won't, but a girl can dream. But that was my number four, was just how much I love Davos, and I thought he was especially wonderful in this episode.
Oh, I agree. I love that line where he says, "Do you mind if I change sides?"
I think everybody wanted to change sides in that moment. And Missandei's like, "She was the queen that we chose." And I'm like, "Yes, that's..." But you know what? Missandei doesn't know that Jon was the king that was chosen as well, so...
That's true, yeah.
Those two have a lot going for them.
They do.
So what was your number three?
So my number three is caves.
So, like Jon Snow and women and caves?
Uh-huh, exactly. That's it. Jon Snow's love life seems highly dependent on caves. So in this one, he finds not only love, but a history lesson. I was going to call this, instead of just calling it caves, I was going to call it Jon Snow's chthonic love life. Chthonic is a very archmaesterish word, and it just means underground. But it's appropriate because, you know, George R.R. Martin is a fan of H.P. Lovecraft, and chthonic is an H.P. Lovecraft kind of word. So in this cave, you know, he shows Dany the dragon's glass, but then he goes and shows her the cave paintings. And in the Inside the Episode segment, Benioff and Weiss say they thought of that cave as being like the cave in Lascaux in France, where prehistoric people painted on the walls. And in this one, we see the ancient alliance of the Children of the Forest and the First Men against the White Walkers. And Jon Snow offers that as proof to Daenerys that the White Walkers are real. And I think this is perhaps the moment where she starts taking him seriously. Mm. I don't think she's really taken him seriously up to this point. After they come out of the cave, then she asks his advice for what to do. So it seems that her view of him has changed. And it was the cave that changed it.
Yeah, you know what? I agree with that, because when they came out of the cave, they came out more as a unit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were very separated when they went in.
That's right.
You know, went in single file and they came out together. And I think that that was definitely on purpose, done on purpose.
Yeah. And they take a step closer to each other. When they're looking at the cave paintings, and that's like the first step towards their ultimate getting together.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow, wow.
there were some sparks flying in the cave.
What I loved in that scene. Oh, did you have anything else about?
Oh,
that?
I was just gonna say, and it just echoes the cave scene with Ygritte when they were north of the wall, and they were in the cave that had the hot springs, and they did a little hot tubbing.
Yes, they did. And that was wonderful that they called back to that, because I think that there were a few different callbacks in that cave scene. One of them was Daenerys's line to Jon when she said, isn't your people's survival more important than your pride? That was almost word for word what Jon said to Mance Rayder when Mance wouldn't kneel to Stannis to save his own people and get south of the wall. And
that's
it
right.
Was his pride that killed him in the end on that. And I think that when Daenerys said that to Jon, Jon might have probably changed his mind about Daenerys, just like Daenerys changed her mind about Jon in that
cave. Yes.
I love it that's the kind of fan service and the kind of reward that I really enjoy about this show, is that it's not in your face. Like moments like these, if you've been paying attention and you have a true love for the show and for the story, that's the kind of stuff that you pick up.
Yes.
And that you kind of take to heart, like, oh, it this is paying off. Me paying attention is paying off, and knowing that, you know, Jon is learning from past mistakes of his mentors and the people that have shaped him along the way.
Right. It's like you're being rewarded for being an attentive viewer.
Yeah. Like with Davos saying viewer.
Yes.
And then it was a nice reminder from, what episode was it? Was it Hold the Door, where we learned about the White Walkers and how they became White Walkers?
I thought it was earlier than Hold the Door.
With the scene of before. Yeah, maybe it was like...
I think it was maybe the episode before.
Okay. Because I loved that we got that callback to what Leaf said to, I think, Bran when he woke up. And he said, you know, you created the White Walkers. And then she kind of gave her story. And we saw kind of the flashback of that and what Bran saw of that. And then you kind of get the proof of it later, all this time later in the cave with the children in the forest, and they drew it out. They drew out the White Walkers. They drew out the children and the men together and that's so great to see, because we do know that the children of the forest, for anybody that may have missed that episode, the children of the forest created the White Walkers to protect themselves against the men, the first men, and ended up having to unite with the first men to eventually have the war against the White Walkers. So,
right.
I love that kind of all came around. Like, this is cyclical. This is happening again. And it has happened. And like you said, Daenerys starts to take Jon seriously, which is a big important moment for the two of these as potential allies.
Right. Which is an important moment for the whole world. Because as Jon says, he can't defeat the army of the dead by himself.
No, and she can't win Westeros alone.
No, she'll never win the North by herself.
Well, my number three was actually Jon and Dany in the cave. So,
oh, convergence.
Yes, it was perfect. So what was your number two?
So my number two is transformations. And this touches on some of the things that you mentioned in reunions. But this is transformations. And that is that none of the Stark kids is the same. So Bran, obviously, has become the Three-Eyed Raven and isn't Bran anymore. Mira Reed says to him, "You don't need me anymore." And Bran says, "No, I don't."
Such a dick move.
I know. Mira says, "Bran," and he says, "I'm not anymore, not really." He says he can remember being Brandon Stark, but he's not Brandon Stark anymore. And Mira tells him that he died in the cave. And in a way, he did die in the cave, but he became the Three-Eyed Raven. And I wish Mira could see how important that is, but she really can't. She just says, "My brother died for you. Hodor and Summer died for you. I almost died for you." And she's thinking they all died for Bran Stark, but really they died for the potential of Bran becoming the Three-Eyed Raven. I think Bran is going to be really important, and what he can see, what he knows, what he can do through the trees is really crucial. So all those sacrifices, they weren't for nothing. But they also weren't for the little boy, Brandon Stark. They were for him to become the Three-Eyed Raven. And he's now transformed into something that's basically the same as the previous Three-Eyed Raven, who was, you know, tangled into the Werewood roots. I have to say, I was stunned in the show when they ended up, Bran ended up leaving the cave, because I thought he was going to stay there forever. I thought he'd never come back to Winterfell. I thought he would grow into the tree roots like the previous Three-Eyed Raven.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you think he was supposed to go back to Winterfell, or if that was just something that he did because it was safe or something.
Yeah, well, and I wonder if it'll happen the same way as in the book as in the show, because I really thought that he was just going to take up where the previous Three-Eyed Raven was, you know, he was wearing out, he was losing his strength, so he needed a replacement, and Bran would just kind of move into the roots. So, you know, he can do what he can do from anywhere, I guess. He doesn't even need to be in direct contact with a weirwood tree anymore because he's become so powerful. He can see, I guess he's got a wireless connection to the trees. He doesn't need to plug in.
Him and Sam are the internet.
That's right. They are the internet of Westeros.
As much as I think that Bran is really crucial to the story, I think the same about Sam. I think the two of them together, I think that they may be that link that gets them through whatever it is that they have to face.
Which totally makes sense because, you know, George R. R. Martin is all about brains over brawn, and you know, they're the brainy ones. So, you know, if you think about it, George is highly influenced by Lord of the Rings, and one of the key points of Lord of the Rings is that the smallest person can make a difference. It's Frodo who carries the ring. And Bran is kind of an analog of Frodo. He's the small, crippled boy who is carrying the power. Oh, by the way, you know, I know there are people who think that Bran is the Night King. I don't like that theory. I don't think that's the case. This whole time travel theory where Bran goes back and wargs into the man who got the dragon glass put in his chest and became the Night King just as it's happening, and then Bran becomes the Night King. And I don't like that theory because it doesn't leave the possibility for Bran to be heroic in the end, for Bran to save people. And I just don't think that Bran is on the side of evil.
I hope not. I hope that that's true. I hope that the Night King is his own thing and that Bran is his own thing. I do like the theory that Bran is Bran is Bran is Bran is Bran all the way back. I love that theory. And I hope that there's an answer to that. There might not be, but it would be nice. I'll wait for the books.
So Bran is obviously transformed, but Sansa and Arya have also transformed. Sansa's become Lady Stark, and Sansa sees that Arya has changed, and she seems suspicious without really understanding Arya's transformation. When Arya says Joffrey was at the top of her list, Sansa says, "What list?" And Arya says, "It's the list of people I'm going to kill." Sansa, it looks like she's kind of overcome with disbelief, and then she laughs. And Arya laughs too, and it's like Arya is masquerading as air quotes Arya while still being a bit of no one in that moment. But Bran knows all about her transformation. He tells Arya he thought she might have gone to King's Landing, and when Sansa asks why, Bran says Cersei's on her list, so Bran knows about her list.
Which is amazing. My favorite part there was when Arya goes, "Most of them are dead already." She's like, "I'm not even going to tell you who's on my list. I'm taking care.
That's right.
I'm handling my business."
Yeah. And when she watches Arya sparring with Brienne, she's seeing somebody who she doesn't recognize. This is not the Arya that she knew. And so Sansa's kind of processing the transformation of both Bran and Arya at this point.
Any other transformations?
Just the three Stark kids transformations.
Just the three main characters. No big.
Yeah, that's all.
Oh, that was wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. So my number two is actually Arya and Brienne's training scene.
Yeah, good.
I just love this scene. I love the fact that we have two really strong warrior women that are going to fight each other, but they're making each other stronger at the same time. They're not trying to cut each other down, which is wonderful, but they're testing each other out. And the whole dynamic of this scene is wonderful. You've got like I said earlier, I think that this was timed exactly the way that it needed to be timed between Arya and Sansa. You've got Littlefinger, kind of thinking that he's watching in the shadows and playing his part when I think he's being watched this entire time. Bran is inexplicably gone. I'm sure maybe he's watching, which is really wonderful. You know, I felt really bad for Brienne. I felt really bad for Brienne when she looked up and saw Sansa so upset and walk away because poor Brienne, just as strong as she is, as formidable of a warrior woman that she is, she cannot get her emotions in check.
Yeah, true.
She feels everything and she feels it all out loud. Did you notice at the end of the scene when they closed in on Littlefinger and he bows to Arya before he walks away that there was a raven in the background and it chirped 3 times?
I didn't notice that. Wow.
I felt that that was maybe a silent, very small signal that Bran is also in that scene.
Yes. Yes, that's a really good catch.
Yeah. On my second watch, I counted the chirps and I was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing.
The other thing I love about that training sequence is the camera angles that they use. Mm. They keep using a very high placed camera looking down at Arya that emphasizes the size difference between the two of them.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great. So I beat somebody a foot taller than me in a fencing match once.
Good for you.
So you I was fence? A fencer. In-
Wait, let's yeah. back up.
I was a fencer in college. And in those days, women were only allowed to compete. There are 3 weapons in competitive fencing: foil, saber, and épée. And foil is the lightest of the weapons. And an épée is more like a, you know, like a 17th, 18th century rapier. It's a longer blade, stiffer, it's heavier. Mm. And so women were only allowed to fence, to compete in foil fencing. But there were a lot of women who wanted to get into the other 2 weapons. And I was part of a group that put on demonstration matches in order to promote the idea of women being able to fence in saber and épée. And épée was my favorite weapon. And so in this demonstration match, I was fencing with a man who was, I'm 5'3". He was about 6'3", maybe 6'4".
Oh my gosh.
And in fencing matches, you score just by touching your opponent. And I beat him by hitting him 5 times in the arm, because he wasn't used to having underneath his arm. He wasn't used to fencing with somebody as short as I was. So he would come in towards me with a, you know, a lunge towards me, and I would just hit him in the underside of the arm and score a point before he could touch me.
Wow.
And that's kind of a little bit of what Arya does with Brienne as well. She keeps coming up from underneath.
Yeah, she got the arms and the legs. Mm-hmm,
exactly. And so I loved that match because it was really well choreographed in the way that a much smaller person can fight with a larger person.
Did you see the making of that scene?
Yeah.
I thought that was fascinating watching them choreograph that and train for that.
Definitely. Yeah. And you know what's amazing about Maisie Williams? She's not actually left-handed.
Yep, I did know that.
But she does so well fencing with her left hand.
So do you think she's probably then received only training as a left-hander? Mm-hmm. I wonder if she could even do it with her right hand.
Maybe not, yeah.
I don't know. Is it easy to, I mean, if you were to learn it on your non-dominant hand, would it be easy to train yourself to do it with your dominant hand since it is your dominant hand, or would it be just completely different?
I think it would take a lot of work.
Okay.
Because everything's backwards.
Okay. Yeah, because I remember in No One, I believe it was No One, that she made a big point of using her right hand in that opening scene.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which suggests that it wasn't Arya that was being Arya.
Mm-hmm.
So, gosh, I love Now that I've rewatched this and dissected every single episode, I used to really hate going to Bravos on first watch.
Oh, really?
I did.
Oh.
Because I didn't see why we were there.
You
know, it didn't seem like there was an end in sight. And now that I have a better scope of things, but now that I have a better sense of things, I feel like I'm watching it with kind of new eyes. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to really appreciate everything that she's learned. And I've come to appreciate it so much that it's actually one of my favorite storylines now.
Well, I love the character, Arya. Mm-hmm. And so I was always happy to follow her adventures in Braavos.
I wish that I could have appreciated it along the way. The whole mystery of it, and just it seemed to drag on all the time. And I hated the waif so much.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't until I realized that the waif and Jock and Hagar and like could be either or at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And I really started to kind of appreciate the fact that the faceless men really were these faceless men and they weren't people. And you have to like unlock your brain enough to accept that, I think, to fully appreciate the scope of that narrative.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, the faceless men are something else.
Arya's story. If anybody has like a ton of time on their hands and would like to give me a gift, I would like all of Arya's scenes to be edited together in one long movie. I just want her story edited together on a disc to watch.
Yeah.
I want him for all the characters, but if I had to pick just one, it's Arya.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The last thing I wanted to say about Arya and Brienne's training scene is... at the beginning of the scene, at the top of the scene, Brienne says, "Don't go where your enemy leads you." And
yes.
I think that this was really important because the entire scene was about leading Littlefinger.
Yes, very good.
So you start with Brienne saying, "Don't go where your enemy leads you." And the scene ends with three chirps of a raven. And I don't know if that was on purpose. I hope it was. It was just, it gave all new depth and meaning to that entire sequence for me.
Yeah, that's very good analysis.
Sometimes I get it right. Your number one?
So I'm calling my number one the nuclear option.
Yes, good. I love it.
And it's the dragons in the battle.
Mm-hmm.
And the dragons are it's just one dragon, but in general, dragons are weapons of mass destruction in this world. The way that they're like nuclear weapons of the fantasy world, I think, is emphasized by one brief scene where there's a pile of ashes where Drogon has burned a soldier to a crisp, and the ashes blow away, so the outline of the body disappears in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
It looks just like that nuclear war dream sequence in Terminator 2. It's amazing to me that, you know, Jamie and Randall Tarley keep yelling, "Hold the line, hold the line." Who's going to hold the line when there's a dragon charging at you?
Well, and also all you can think about really is for me was Robert Baratheon having his bro picnic back in season one, going a Dothraki horde in open field, and everybody's like, "Pshaw, that'll never happen." And
yeah,
Dickon's face says it all.
Uh-huh. Yes, it does. So, but this battle is the, you know, the first time in a couple hundred years that there's been a large battle with dragons going against field troops. And when Aegon the Conqueror originally conquered Westeros, there was a battle called the Field of Fire, where Aegon, riding his dragon Balerion the Black Dread, defeated the Lannister armies during his original conquest. And so this battle is in-world, reminiscent of that battle. And all the soldiers, everybody on that field would know the story of the Field of Fire. So that would just have to feed their terror of that dragon even more. And the power. There's another scene where Jamie shouts, "Take cover!" And I think, "Take cover? Where are you going to take cover from dragon fire?" Dive under a wagon? Oh, bad idea. It's wood. It's going to burn.
He had a lot of bad decisions.
He did.
his last decision was probably the worst of all.
Yes. Yes. Tyrion saying, "You idiot," was quite accurate. He was being an idiot.
I don't know why anybody thinks that they could take a spear and charge a dragon.
I think he was charging Daenerys. I don't think he thought he was going to kill the dragon. I think he thought he was going to kill Daenerys.
I just can't even see how that story ends that way. It's interesting to me that they thought that the scorpion was even going to penetrate at all, considering what we know about dragons,
right,
and the fact that the scales are impenetrable.
Well, and you get that first scene of the archers shooting and all the arrows just bouncing off of Drogon. Queen Rhaenys, Aegon's sister, her dragon Meraxes was killed by a scorpion by a very, very lucky shot that went through its eye.
Mm-hmm.
So Qyburn is maybe hoping for a lucky shot. Also, Drogon is still young. And so perhaps his scales aren't as hard as a fully mature dragon. So again, maybe he's hoping that, you know, a lucky shot will slide in between the scales. And Drogon does get wounded, but not killed.
Yeah, it was a lucky shot. It was like, looked like it was right in between like scales and the wings.
Right in a similar spot to where he was wounded in the fighting pit in Meereen.
He's like, "Ow, that hasn't even healed over, man." My favorite part of it, I don't know if you caught it, I'm sure you did, was when they did land after Drogon blew the scorpion fire, like he blew it up with the fire. Mm-hmm. He actually landed and he took his tail and he like creamed the rest of it, like, "Fuck you."
Because he's pissed. It's like, wham.
I burst out laughing. I'm like, even Drogon got a funny moment in this episode.
Why don't we move on to your number one, because I imagine it probably is
it's the loot train battle. It's just as a topic. Incidentally, Bronn made my kill list because of this episode.
Why? Because he shot the dragon?
Because I just don't see how you can see a dragon for the very first time and want to immediately kill it. He did it with such glee. He didn't do it like as a, "Oh, I'm being ordered to do this." When he got Drogon and thought he got him, he smiled. He was like gleeful about it. And I just, There's something kind of sinister about that. And I'm hoping that Drogon eventually kills him in season 8. I'd really like to see Bronn die in season 8. And I don't know if he has any loyalties to anybody.
I don't think he does, no.
Yeah, I mean, I really do believe that if the Night King gave him an ice castle, that he'd kill everybody. Hasn't gotten his castle yet. Yeah, I'm just not, I don't know. I'm not a Bronn fan after this episode. And I'd be interested to see if he goes to Winterfell, if he stays in King's Landing. I don't know, even if they wanted to keep him in King's Landing, if they could even do it, because I know that Lena Headey and Jerome Flynn have that contract, that weird clause in their contract. So I don't know what that says for Bronn's character. Maybe he'll show up to Winterfell and both dragons will torch him immediately. The end. Bye, Bronn.
Yeah, you know, that's what we saw in the season 8 trailer. That's exactly what happened.
Aha, okay, perfect. I've spoiled myself. This battle really taught me, in the episode at the end, D.B. Weiss says something that I completely disagreed with, and that was you are confronted with two major characters against each other, and you don't want either side to lose. And I think that this episode, at least for me, told me exactly where my loyalties are as far as this show is concerned, because I didn't care what happened to the Lannister side, any of them.
Well, you know, that's exactly the same thing that he said about the Battle of the Blackwater, too. I wonder if he'll say it again in season 8.
You know, you want the Night King to win, and you want Jon Snow to win. It's like Sophie's choice.
I know. It's like, I did not want Jaime to die in this battle, but I sure didn't want the Lannisters to win the battle. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's Cersei's forces. We don't want Cersei to win.
No.
No. With Jaime now detached from Cersei, I think it will be a lot easier to get on board with who wins the battle, as the war, at least, against with the living.
Right.
I think the only reason why anybody wanted, with the exception of Wendy, wanted the Lannisters to stay afloat was because Jaime was still there. Mm-hmm. But with Jaime removed, with Tyrion removed, with all the Lannister children dead, you just got a crazy woman. You've got the Mad Queen, Frankenstein's monster, and Dr. Frankenstein. And that's it. That's all you have over there.
That's right. Yeah.
So what about you? How did you feel in this battle? Did you feel like D.B. Weiss, or did you feel like you know where your loyalties are?
Oh, no. No, I know entirely where my loyalties are. Yeah. I don't want the Lannisters to win.
That's good.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Some of my favorite moments of this battle were just a lot of the cinematography. When you have Bronn going, and when he fell from his horse and he starts running towards the scorpion, my husband called it, when we watched it, he said, oh, that's the fog of war. That is, you know, mm-hmm. that's what it is, you know, underneath all of that smoke and the screaming and everything that's happening. One of my favorite parts of that whole sequence was you just briefly see Drogon fly in and out of the fog.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was gorgeous and just so well placed. You know, Drogon flying very silently, skimming along the river, mm-hmm. was beautiful.
And the ripple on the water.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The little details like that. And I like the fact that we are reminded they are next to a river. So Bronn did put him into a river and not a puddle. Like a lot of people think, oh, Jaime's all of a sudden by a river. No, he was always by a river.
Yeah. Well, and there's dialogue about crossing the river at the beginning mm-hmm. of the episode. Randall Tarley says something about getting across the river. So, yes, they are by a river.
Speaking of, you're reminded kind of subtly in this episode also that Cersei is a tyrant in the fact that they are going to farmers through the entire mm-hmm. reach to grab all of their supplies and all of their harvests, and they're going to flog, and they're going to, you know, probably kill whoever doesn't hand over their harvest to the Lannister or the Lannister armies. And I think that was a nice way of saying, hey, they may have won this and they may have all of this stuff, but they're still taking everything from the common people.
That's right. You know? Yeah.
And that's just shitty. There's no other word for it. It's just shitty.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. Well, and so, yeah, the fog of war, definitely. And just the scope of this is amazing. So, and it is more like a theatrical movie than a TV show battle. And so you probably know this. They set 20 stuntmen on fire at the same time for this mm-hmm. scene, which is a record number.
Insane.
Yes.
I just couldn't imagine being there's a really great featurette. If anybody hasn't seen it, I think it is on the HBO Go app. If you go through all the extras, it is there, but it could also be at, you know, GameOfThrones.com, I'm sure, or on YouTube. But it is the making of the Loot Train battle, and they talk about what Rennie was just talking about, this amazing sequence that they had to film and setting the people on fire and watching everybody kind of stand by and, you know, douse them really quickly. And I mean, they're real people.
Yeah, they are.
Which is insane.
It is. Yeah, stuntmen have a really dangerous job.
Yeah, they do. I would never want to be one.
No. They get hurt a lot. A lot of broken bones.
How about the horses, too? I just, the poor horses, you can't tell them, okay, this is pretend. I mean, what is going through their heads when they're filming this kind of stuff?
Oh, speaking of horses, one of my favorite visual parts of the battle is the Dothraki jumping up onto their horses.
Yes.
Yes. It's a really stupid and impractical thing to do, but it looks great.
Yeah, it does. I'm so glad that the Dothraki are here. How many Dothraki do you think Daenerys really has?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thousands. She has 8,000 Unsullied. So I bet she has more Dothraki than Unsullied.
Yeah, so if she has all of the calls that she burned down mm-hmm. at Vice Dothrak, and each of them, let's say that there's 8 to 10, so mm-hmm. let's say there's even 8, and each of the calls have their Khalasar, which is probably, what, a few thousand?
Mm-hmm.
So we could probably say there's at least 18 to 20,000.
Yeah. I don't think there's more than that because, you know, her flotilla of ships wouldn't have brought an infinite number, you know, but I mm-hmm. would say 18 to 20,000 is probably a pretty good estimate.
I'd love to know how they're all faring on Dragonstone.
I know. How do they even all fit on Dragonstone?
Like, where are they? Yeah. How big is this island?
Yeah.
It seems a little like, we don't see, it would be interesting to see, like, some rolling hills and like that's where the Khalasar or the horde or whatever that they've all like set up their tents or something, but you know it doesn't look like a lot of them are there, so it's hard to get a really good scope until this battle of how many there are because they fill up the entire horizon.
Yes, and I love that you hear them before you see them and the gray clouds, dark clouds on the horizon, and then you see that all of them just screaming towards Lannister lines. And oh boy, it's a nightmare come true.
It's an exciting scene. My hair, I just feel like my skin is on fire when I watch it.
Yeah.
Heart pumping and exciting. And I can't get through it without standing. I just have to at least stand and just pace a little bit because I just get too excited just to stay seated. Yeah, so that was my number one. Do you have anything else on the loot train?
No, I think we've said it all.
Any notes?
Nope, I think we covered it this time. Do you have notes?
The one thing that we did not talk about, I think, was just, other than just a quick mention, was Cersei talking to... It's Tycho
Nestoris. Tycho. Yeah, Tycho.
He is a name I cannot retain to save my life. But they were, it seems that he's, you know, jockeying for a little bit more from her now that there isn't going to be, you know, interest payments or a debt or anything like that. He's like, well, what else do you need? Is there anything else we could do? And we get the information that Qyburn has reached out to the Golden Company. And mm-hmm. I think this is the first time that we're hearing that. Am I right?
I believe that is the first time we've heard it, yes.
Okay. So that'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. I'm still hoping that we see Daario again. I'm hoping that there's some kind of a double cross mix-up cell sword thing that happens with that. Who knows?
Yeah. I definitely think we're going to see the Golden Company in season 8. But I have no idea how that's going to play out.
They are loyal to Daenerys, or if they're loyal to nobody, or if they'll just kill everybody like Bronn. I don't know. But I think, if I remember correctly, Daario used to be in the Golden Company.
You know, I don't remember whether he was or not. I think he had been in several different sellsword companies, but it wasn't the Golden Company that he was with when he met Danny, when he was one of the three leaders and he killed the other two. That was not the Golden Company. So I don't know if he will turn up with them or not.
It would be such a cool double cross. I don't know. I'm probably wrong. But okay, so that's going to do it. So we're going to take a little break and we will be back with some Dragon's Breath and our worst ending a little bit. Stay with us.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born. This world we're thrown, like a dog without a bone, an actor out on loan, riders on the storm.
And we are back. So we have a couple of submissions for our What's the Worst Way This Show Can End? And what's really cool is that we have two that are from... One is from Jason and the other one is from Rima.
Okay. So according to Jason, the absolute worst ending, in my opinion, is if Jaime kills Cersei and temporarily takes the throne while Bran wargs into Viserion, simultaneously turning the dragon and Bran back into their old selves. And then Dany, Jon, and newly revealed as a Targaryen Tyrion ride Drogon, Rhaegal, and Viserion into a glorious battle with the White Walkers and their hordes of whites, beating them into oblivion. And then Jon and Daenerys take the throne together as king and queen, with Tyrion as their hand and Sam as their head maester, ushering in a new age of peace and prosperity for the citizens of Westeros. Barf! This show has differentiated itself by not being a traditional adventure where good wins and evil is vanquished. It's dark and tragic and filled with loss and heartbreak. So while I wouldn't want to see the White Walkers march in and freeze all of Westeros and everyone in it, I do hope the ending is truly bittersweet as we've been promised. I'm ready for some heartbreak. Well, me too, Jason. I'm with you on this one.
You know... Okay, I get it. I do. I agree that, you know, a happy ending would be insulting to the show, but I don't need a lot of heartbreak. I feel like the show has broken us down a lot over the years, so it would be nice to get a few wins. I'm not saying it has to be like completely a win, but I just love it that he's like, the worst way this show could end is if everyone wins. It's such a Jason thing to say.
It is a very Jason thing to say.
Thank you, Jason. Rima Joe says, one awful way that springs to mind is if we get Bran waking up from his coma after being pushed out the window in season one and saying that he had the craziest dream. I might throw my TV out the window.
Me too. Yeah, that would be terrible.
I think that Rima's right. I think that actually wins for me. I think that that would be the worst way, like a very Roseanne way of ending the show. I had a crazy dream.
So I want to say to Rima Joe, having listened to last week's podcast, that I am honored and thrilled by her girl crush on me.
Oh, I think that there would be a lot of people out there that feel the very same way about Renny. Renny, you are one of my favorite parts of the entire podcast. You really are.
Thank
you. When you don't have a voicemail like 1 or 2 weeks, I often wonder if you're okay. I'm like, I should email her and just find out if she's okay. You're an absolute joy.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, so we are going to go to our Dragon's Breath. Rima Joe says, Hashtag Dracarys. I literally buzz every time the dragons make an appearance, and we've seen them in action before, but now we get Drogon in a real battle, and holy hell, it doesn't disappoint. He is a magnificent beast, and one of my fave moments is after Bronn pierces him with the spear, he lights up the scorpion and then swipes it with his tail. Loot train battle for the win! And then the Dothraki in open combat and standing on their horses while releasing arrows will never not do it for me. Me too.
Gemma Hall says, I haven't had a chance to rewatch it yet, but I do love this episode. The most scary moment for me was Jaime, the idiot, thinking it was a good idea to charge toward Daenerys. I remember screaming at the TV as he started to charge because I was like, Erg, no, neither of them can die. Then Drogon gets his wing in front of her and blasts the fire, and Bronn saves the day. It was an epic battle, and loved that episode. Wonder what Dany will say to Jaime if they get a one-on-one scene together when he turns up at Winterfell.
Oh, man. Yeah, I wonder. I actually wondered about that this week, weirdly enough.
Hmm.
Because I've been so excited for Jaime to get back and just and to reunite with Brienne and reunite with Tyrion. I never thought of, oh, he has to probably also see Daenerys, who he charged at with a spear the last time they saw each other.
So the perfect thing for her to say would be, you idiot, you fucking idiot.
Yeah. Alex Baelish says, Kristen and Archmaester Rennie, so glad to hear you both, but very sad this rewatch is coming to an end.
Mm-hmm.
The best scene in the whole series is in this episode for me. I loved when Arya and Brienne train. Poor Podrick can't get a break. It makes me so happy because it means so much on many levels. First, where they both came from to get to this point, not to mention the respect and love was pouring out of them. But most of all, the fact that the two onlookers were stunned or surprised at how she is a threat. Can't tell if Littlefinger is scared or plotting. That said, oh my god, loot train. Nobody puts a dragon mama in the corner. That scene was like a warm blanket on a cold day. Could not get enough of it.
Gary Meineke says, on first watch, I thought it was an awesome display of power. On rewatch, I couldn't help but think the dragon fire could have avoided the supplies and only targeted troops.
What do you think about that?
Well, you know, one of the classic tactics of war is to destroy your enemy's supplies so that they can't continue. Napoleon said an army marches on its stomach. And I think that Gary is probably thinking that Daenerys' forces could take over those supplies for themselves. But I think the Dothraki are pretty used to living off the land. So I think it makes sense to go after the supplies, to just try to destroy all of the wagons and the transport and all the stuff of the Lannister army.
I do agree with you, absolutely. I think I the way, because my husband and I, we had this same exact conversation, because he said the exact same thing that Gary said here.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, one of the listeners actually said that as well. You know, I countered with, I think that even if they did have these supplies, it means that the Dothraki couldn't just ride back to Dragonstone, that they would have to take all of these supplies back to Dragonstone, which would put them now in an open field in a vulnerable position to be attacked if the Lannister forces decided to do a display a counterattack with
yes.
whatever is left over at King's Landing or wherever else. So, you know, I think that it, like you said, Rennie, I think that it's best to just destroy everything. Although it was really strange. I don't know if you noticed it, but there was fire before and after the scorpion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was like he skipped right over it and just kept on blowing.
Yeah.
Which was really weird. So I think that it's best to just get rid of it all. And then hopefully the farmers, you know, didn't have to give up too much of their harvest before that happened.
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole harvest thing, winter is coming and everybody needs to be putting food away for the winter. And nobody seems to really be having the opportunity to do that.
No, these highborn families are just, they're all getting a little greedy with what they want and what they think they deserve. And the poor common folk, they're the ones that are going to end up suffering the most, as usual.
As always, yeah.
Yep. And we do have one voicemail this week because we have lovely Archmaester Rennie to give us all of her thoughts and hopes and dreams and insights. So we do have one from Steve Brown.
Okay, Kristen and guest host, this is Steve. Just finished Spoils of War, and will you forgive me if I forgive? Back up. Take that again. Will you forgive me if I switch sides? I lost the moment. Okay, so this episode, a lot happens. I loved Arya's quote, "I didn't run, you need better guards." I love that. The reunion, or sort of reunion, I guess, between Arya and Brienne is great, where, you know, she kind of challenges Brienne to be her sparring partner, and Brienne says, "Well, I can go get the whatever guy." And she says, "No, he didn't beat the Hound." I thought that was great. Just the reunion between Arya and Sansa was just amazing to see those two together. And then, of course, the end with Dany's dragon attacking the army and getting wounded. And, you know, Dany, she needs a big win at this point. She's just lost her fleet. She's lost so much, but she needs a big win. And I was glad to see... I was worried for a second. I still don't know what's going to happen in the next episode, obviously, with Jaime. But I was happy to see somebody save him there at the end from the dragon's fire. But I also, I will say this: I kept waiting when that battle began. When that battle, the King's Landing battle began, I kept waiting for the dragon to come into play. And I'm excited to see the next episode. Talk to you later.
Oh, Steve, I love you.
You know what? This kind of reminded me. He didn't express any worry that Jaime might drown. And when this originally aired, I remember thinking, well, was that the end of Jaime after all? Because he's wearing armor and he's sinking down in the river.
That I remember, that's all anybody could talk about for the next week was if Jaime was dead or not.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. I totally forgot that and just the awesomeness of that scene were literally the only two things anybody took from that episode.
Yes.
I always look forward to whatever he has to say. Just because he's a first-time watcher.
Right.
And, you know, especially that episode. I know that for Beyond the Wall, it took him 3 tries to get a voicemail because of the death of Viserion and how it hit him.
Oh, yeah.
So I felt so bad for him. He told me, he goes, I couldn't get it right. I just couldn't get it right. I'm like, dude, I understand. Yeah. You don't have to say a thing to me. I get it.
Well, and it's good to be reminded by a first-time viewer of just what a shock that was when it happened.
I didn't expect it to happen.
Me neither. I did not see that coming.
Yeah, thank you so much, Steve, for your voicemail. And I look forward to podcasting with him in a few weeks. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. That'll be a fun listen.
Okay, so that's our show. Thank you so much for joining me today, Archmaester Rennie.
Oh, thank you for having me on again, Kristen. I've had a great time.
I'm so glad. I'm so happy that you were able to fit us in your schedule. And it's always such a pleasure just to hear your thoughts and your insight. And I loved learning about you and fencing today. Oh my gosh, you've become my hero. I just want to know more about that.
Well, that was fun. I'm glad I got to tell that story.
Next episode that we'll be covering is Season 7, Episode 5, East Watch. Joining me for that episode is the lovely Anwen from New Zealand.
The lovely Anwen, yay!
I love her. If you'd like to be a part of the discussion, or if you want to send your New Zealand love her way, since New Zealand has had a pretty terrible, tragic week this past week.
Yes.
Send in some feedback, send in some love. You could do it privately, you could do it publicly, however you want to do it. We'll read it out on the podcast and just flood her with love and light. And you can do so in this way.
If you'd like to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email us at dragons@podcastica.com. We also have our webpage where you can submit feedback as well, housepodcastica.com.
You can check out our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/housepodcastica.
We're also on Twitter and Instagram at housepodcastica.
And be sure to check out the other great podcasts at podcastica.com. Let's see, what do we have going on right now? We have Walking Dead Cast is in full swing.
Yes.
Walking
Dead. And you were on Walking Dead Cast recently.
I was.
That was fun.
It was a lot of fun. I had a good time. I know, I had my Game of Thrones hat on, though. I think I overanalyzed it a little too much. That's okay. So that's all in full swing. And I think Walking Dead is just fantastic right now. I can't say enough good things about it.
Yes.
Yeah, are you enjoying it?
This season's good. I am. I definitely am.
Good. Yeah. I'm glad that we got to record this before the episode tonight, too. I was like, we have to do it before Walking Dead.
That's right.
Strange Indeed is about to cover the Umbrella Academy. They're going to record their very first episode this week. And my other podcast, Lost Revisited, We Have to Go Back, is about halfway through the second season right now. So everything's kind of chugging along and we're all having a good time.
Yay.
Yeah. Special thanks to Break of Reality for our new intro music. If you want to check them out, you can do so on YouTube or on their website, breakofreality.com. Thanks to Kirk Manley for our podcast art and Ben Beck for website design. Kirk's work can be checked out on his website, studiokm.com. Ben Beck can be found at thenextlevelnetwork.com. Cersei.
The Mountain.
The Night King.
Euron Greyjoy.
Melisandre.
Bronn of the Blackwater.
Brenda Ho.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.